820 AM. The Word. And now at tunein.com.
The Carrie Abbott Show is sponsored by the Legacy Institute. Welcome to the Carrie Abbott Show, your place for news, views, and values you can trust, and relationship insights you need. Now, here's Carrie Abbott.
Oh, it's so good to be with you, friends. Welcome to the Carrie Abbott Show. We are thrilled that you have joined us, and I'm really excited about a special guest that I have today. Dr. Mark Evans is with me, and you're going to love this because we talk a lot about music and its impact on our health. Well, Dr. Evans is a composer. He's a conductor. I don't think we've had a conductor before. He's a pianist and organist. He has a multifaceted background in music and writing and broadcasting and education. He hosts the popular Mark My Words television program. He's the founder and president of Cultural Conservation, which is going to be where we're going to land here in just a moment. And the foundation of that organization is a dedication to the principle that society should preserve its cultural resources with the same care and devotion that a nation devotes to its natural resources. I absolutely love that. Just a little bit more about his background because it's fascinating. He literally grew up in the world of film, music, and Hollywood. He was a private pupil of a renowned composer, Mario Castelnuovo Tedesco, and of Roy Harris, if you know these names. He has a book called Soundtrack, The Music of the Movies, and it's been recognized as the definitive book on the history of film scoring. How exciting is that? So he has authored numerous books. In fact, he has two more out, Mark My Words, How to Discover the Joy of Music and the Delight of Language. You know I love that. And Our Musical Heritage, From Yankee Doodle to Carnegie Hall. He is with me right now by Zoom, actually. And I'm telling you that because that's the sausage making you don't often get to see. Sometimes it's phone, sometimes Zoom, sometimes in person. Welcome to the show, Dr. Mark Evans. It's an honor to have you with us.
It's my pleasure. It's an honor for me to join you.
Well, thank you, kind sir. Your history is so intriguing, and the fact that you have all of that talent, all that experience, and you highly value words, which I love. Our listening community would tell you I'm a word girl. So I'm just so keen on your message and your dedication to the idea that we need to preserve our cultural resources. I'm so excited to have you share with people what you mean by that. First of all, what an exciting life you've had as a composer, conductor, pianist, organist, et cetera, which is your favorite?
Well, I think probably you can't really pick one favorite, but I would say probably musically speaking, of course, composing, because that's the creative side. I spend every day at the piano. But even at the piano, I do a lot of improvising, and I think it's the opportunity to be musically creative that I value most, as I do with words. What I value most in words, in spite of having done a lot of broadcasting, is the opportunity, again, to be creative and to write, writing music, writing books, expressing a point of view. Mm-hmm. I grew up in the music department at a large Hollywood movie studio, and I left Hollywood because I became disenchanted with a lot of things that were going on in Hollywood. I was pretty much of a family values type. Mm-hmm. I described myself as a self-proclaimed fugitive from the Hollywood rat race. I say that there are some incredibly nice and incredibly talented people who work in that industry. I had some as friends, certainly some as mentors during my musical childhood. But sadly, many of the people who control the industry, the ones who run things, are not talented and not nice. I got involved in broadcasting and became interested in cultural issues when I began observing students coming out of school, many of whom were unfamiliar with any music other than what they'd encountered on social media, typically rock, rap, and pop, never any classical music or jazz or musical theater or classic film scores. Many hadn't read a book that had not been assigned to them, and many others didn't know even the most basic facts of American history.
Hmm.
So I started asking myself, what can be done about this? I believe strongly that our history, language, and arts define how we see the past, present, and future.
That's right.
And if we lose them, we lose the ability to cope with any present or future political or economic crisis.
Mm-hmm.
I think our language has become jargon peppered with vulgarity and spoken by those who typically have never been properly taught to read, write, or spell.
Mm.
And our history gets rewritten daily by those who never learned it in the first place. And of course, the arts, and the arts of prime importance to me, being a musician, are in danger of literally fading into an undeserved oblivion.
Wow. What you've just said, I know, is landing well with our listening community. We talk a lot about these things in various, from various points of view. You've brought it all together, which I see on your site, culturalconservation.org. Friends, you can go and find all of this information and information on his books, his history here. You have the best of the past, which shouldn't be forgotten, the best of the present, which shouldn't be ignored, and the best of the future, which shouldn't be undiscovered. I agree with you on the vulgarity of language. I am surprised, I'll even say shocked at times, when I hear people use words that we've never heard before on TV, and that they're airing from all walks of life, from people I think are wonderful normally, and then they start using language, and I think, why are you doing that? And it has degraded. And this is what people don't realize. Language creates culture, and the way that we frame and scaffold that culture for the next generation, and the more degradation, the worse it can get. And it is all around us. And like I said, good people and maybe people I don't agree with are doing this. What are your thoughts about that? Is, for instance, let's just say, even if you, whether you're conservative or not, you and I have not talked about this, but those, you know, who have podcasts or TV shows or anchors or anyone, you know, with a microphone, we'll say that. And then to bring news to the air, and or even a preacher who might swear. What do you think about that?
Well, I'll go to an anecdote which comes to mind. I had a discussion with the comedian Tom Dreesen, who's one of the old school comics. He was the opening act for 14 years for Frank Sinatra.
Oh, wow.
He was launching a new act at a comedy club in Los Angeles, and he overheard two young comedians talking one to another, and they didn't recognize him. They didn't realize he was listening and that he overheard them. And the one comedian said to the other, "I see we have Tom Dreesen on the program. He's old school." And the other comedian said, "Well, what do you mean old school?" And the first comedian said, "Well, he never uses the F word in his act." And the second comedian said, "He doesn't. Well, what words can he use?"
Oh, they did.
Dreesen, who was standing right there, couldn't resist. He turned, looked at the two young comics, and said, "They're called adjectives."
Right. Oh my goodness.
And I think, though, that's the truth. And the problem is, I think that we've come to this because we've made several very significant mistakes. The first mistake is we mistakenly assume that change and progress are synonymous, and they're not. I sometimes say the phrase "new and improved" means a bigger box and fewer cornflakes.
Mm.
The great writer Russell Kirk put it a bit more elegantly when he said that change may not be salutary reform. Hasty innovation may be a devouring conflagration rather than the torch of progress. The second mistake we make is we confuse fame and quality. We live in what I call the celebrity culture.
Oh, yes.
And we know who the celebrities are. They're glaring at us on the cover of every tabloid. But it's a mistake to assume that just because someone is famous, that they're capable of achievement. The third mistake we make is we assume that technology is synonymous with wisdom, and it isn't. The fact that something is on a computer or a digital device or somehow has been created by artificial intelligence, no way implies that necessarily there's wisdom in back of what's being said, let alone common sense. And the fourth point I make, especially about students, especially teenagers, is that a lot of times people will say, "Well, we know what we like," but in reality, we like what we know. And what we know in some cases is not nearly as much as we should. And when people ask me, "Well, what's the solution? Where can we go? What's the answer?" A lot of times, again, we go to places that are more part of the problem than the solution. For example, we go to academia, but the academic world today is very much part of the problem. very much mm-hmm. Often indoctrination setters, often involved in following trends, and that's no solution. The government is a place we go, but the government is not an answer either. I tend mm-hmm. to agree with Ronald Reagan, who once said the scariest words in the English language are said by the fellow who greets you and says, "Hi, I'm from the government and I'm here to help."
Right.
And the third place we look for help is the entertainment industry. And of course, especially in Hollywood and in New York, the industry is one of the prime sources of cultural decline. So that's hardly part of the solution. So I started cultural conservation and I wrote these books, Mark My Words and Our Musical Heritage, to try to address positive solutions that parents and grandparents could take to see to it that their children and grandchildren are exposed to the very best of our culture.
I think that's beautiful. I would say I would add to that, and you and I don't know each other. I am not I'm not completely aware of your history, but I will tell you, I go to my faith and to the words and the music that I grew up with, growing up in a healthy church that believed that God had created each of us for a purpose with divine designs, and that we were to live into agreement with that and become who we wanted, so we might be a gift to the culture, a gift to people, a gift to the generation that we're born in. And the music that I learned and the sounds I heard and the words I heard were life-giving. And that is where I tend to lean into. And I see you have six pillars of cultural conservation here, the delight of language. I couldn't be more thrilled with that title, by the way, the delight of language, because good, beautiful, profound language and words, literally, the Bible says, actually, that you have the power of life and death in the words that you use. Why did you choose the word delight?
Well, I think language is a delight. And I think what's happened with words is really something that's incredibly distressing in terms mm-hmm. of our language today. We were talking about what I call the triumph of the vulgarians. There's some other factors, too, involved in language. I had some very distinguished mentors, not only musically, but in writing. And one of them was the distinguished humorist, Richard Armour, who wrote over 60 books of humor and light verse.
Wow.
And my Irish friend in Australia, Brendan Walsh, used to say that humor is to life what shock absorbers are to the car. And I like to think in terms of humor, but at the same time, what's happened to language is not funny. Language has become the language of bureaucracy as well as vulgarity. It's become superficial. Mm-hmm. Students are not taught to read properly.
That's right.
Some of them are not taught to write. And the result of this is, if you were to talk to a modern day Hamlet, you likely would hear him say, "To be or not to be, you know, like that is the question." And this pervades.
I'm glad you put the word like in there, because I can't even tell you how much I don't want to hear that, as much as I'm hearing it come from everybody. I don't know why people are inserting that word all the time, like, and then like, and you know, I was like, and then like, I'm like, ah, that's why I stop anyone around me, especially my children and grandchildren.
I'll tell you, there was used to be a famous newscaster at NBC called Edwin Newman, who started, and this, of course, was obviously with tongue-in-cheek, a society at NBC to eliminate using the words, you know, after about every third or fourth word. Right. And Newman said afterwards, it really didn't result in success. It did not result in the elimination of, you know, but it did result in his getting a lot fewer lunch invitations whenever he walked into the NBC commissary.
People were holding their tongue, waiting. Oh, no, I can't skip. Well, the same thing. I mean, we could go on and on about the word which, friends, those of you who've been listening to me for more than a year, and I've been doing this for 15, you don't have to say anything. Just pause. That's just my first hint for you. Listen, speaking of pause, we're going to take a break. We are having a fabulous conversation with a new friend to our listening community, Dr. Mark Evans. You can find him at culturalconservation.org. We'll be right back. Friends, Planned Parenthood is spending millions to target vulnerable women, convincing them the abortion pill is an easy solution. Though Roe was overturned, the abortion pill has grown in popularity, now accounting for over 60% of all abortions. Planned Parenthood doesn't tell women about the pain, regret, and devastation of ending a life. That's why Preborn, the nation's largest pro-life organization, is stepping in through innovative technology to reach women before they take the pill, before it's too late, connecting them to a local preborn clinic where they receive free ultrasound, doubling her chance for choosing life. 300,000 babies have already been saved, but they can't provide these free ultrasound machines without our help. Just $28 provides an ultrasound to a woman in crisis. $140 will help rescue 5 babies. Will you help? Go to preborn.com/Carrie Abbott and let's fight back together. That's preborn.com/Carrie Abbott. And thank you for joining the fight. Hey, loyal, faithful listeners. We continue to hear how much you value the Carrie Abbott Show with its compelling content, current news, relevant relationship topics, biblical insights, high caliber national guests, and of course, resources to inspire you and equip you. We are so glad. Our goal is to make it as easy as possible for you to access the Daily Show while managing your schedule. So I want to remind you to download the Legacy Institute phone app or use whatever platform you like to listen to this show. And computer fans, just go to carrieabbott.com to find the latest episode as well as previous shows. And of course, you can sign up for our weekly review to get the week's shows all at once. So grab your phone, download the app, and stay connected. Truth delivered with grace is a must in these times. And if you need some help, call us at 425-354-8517. That's 425-354-8517.
And now back to the Carrie Abbott Show.
It truly is my honor to introduce you again to Dr. Mark Evans. He is with us today to talk about the fact that the society should preserve its cultural resources with the same care and devotion that a nation devotes to its natural resources. I couldn't agree more. His background as a composer, a conductor, pianist, organist, and just this multifaceted background he has in music and writing, broadcasting, and education. It's really an honor to have you with us, Dr. Evans. And the 6 pillars of cultural conservation that you talk about, I think, are so interesting. We talked about the delight of language, and you and I both agree that let's stop using the word like, everybody. It's just not helpful, and it's really actually so frustrating for those of us who love words, real words, and we can communicate well. How do you tell a parent, if you have had the opportunity when a child is young, how do you tell them to delight in language and encourage that in their children?
Well, I think, first of all, they need to recognize the importance of it. Whenever I talk to anyone that is well-read or loves good books or has an awareness of great music, and I say, how did you become interested in these things? The answer is almost always the same. A parent, mother, father, grandparent, aunt, uncle, maybe a teacher, maybe a close friend, introduced them to it when they were very young. And then when they're exposed to what I consider to be the ghastly pop culture, as they grow up, they're prepared because they have a basis on which to make comparisons. You mentioned the pillars of cultural conservation. Let me touch briefly on 2 more. One, of course, is the joy of music, and the other is our vanishing history. In the case of our vanishing history, it's terribly important. Again, a good example of this, a story that comes from the historian David McCullough, who wrote a book about Harry Truman. He was promoting the book on the air, interviewed by a professional broadcast journalist. And the journalist was very impressed when he began talking about D-Day and the troops storming the beaches at Normandy Beach. And then as they were leaving the studio, the professional broadcaster turned to McCullough and said, "Gee, that was very interesting. Where can I learn more about this guy, Normandy Beach?" He thought that Normandy Beach was a person. Now, you find this constantly going on, and it's very serious, and it's true even in terms of music. I think, for example, it's very important, after writing the Mark My Words book, I said it's better to light candles than curse the darkness. So I thought I'd light a candle of my own, and Our Musical Heritage is a book about American music. It's my guided tour through four genres: concert music, jazz, musical theater, and film music. Mm-hmm. And most people, and especially children, teenagers, students, have no idea, for example, that a composer signed the Declaration of Independence. He was a man named Francis Hopkinson, who represented Pennsylvania. People don't realize why we sing the Star Spangled Banner, or why Yankee Doodle was important in the Revolution, or who the founding fathers of American music were. And of course, then there's the whole issue of concert music and how American composers created distinctly American symphonies and chamber music, the development of jazz, which is a fascinating story.
It is.
And then the advent of American musical theater, which is a completely new genre created in the United States. Mm. And finally, of course, a subject that's very close to my own heart, the area of classic motion picture music. And these are all things that should really be learned mm-hmm. by students. You know, it's a famous quotation that Ronald Reagan said, that freedom is never more than one generation away from extinction. Right. And I think the same can be said for music and our arts and language and history. So you ask yourself, what can be done about it? And I'm a big advocate of self-education. Obviously, I've written these books, Mark My Words, Our Musical Heritage. Mm-hmm. We have a website. We post audio and video. That's culturalconservation.org. Self-education can be the answer. I had the pleasure of getting to know the writer Ray Bradbury, probably the most famous science fiction writer in history and in the world. And Ray was too poor when he got out of high school in the Depression to go to college. So he went to the LA Public Library 3 days a week, and he would tell people, I never graduated from college, but I graduated from the Los Angeles Public Library.
So good.
And this is something that you can do today with internet. There are a vast number of resources for parents and grandparents. We try to provide guidance. The whole idea of the movement, cultural conservation, is a movement that we want everyone to join. And I think ultimately that the cultural conservation movement can be rather like the movement that encouraged people to preserve natural resources, to go out and plant a tree, to go out and respect the environment. And I think that's something that can be done with our culture as well. And every parent or grandparent can do it. You're never too young to start, and you're never too old to start.
That's right. Such a good word. I was blessed and honored to homeschool my five children for 9 years. And then we put them in private school because I was running a ministry and I got tired. And I admit that. That's okay. But I'll tell you, being responsible for their education, whether they were with the teacher part of that time, we had the privilege of introducing music during, you know, in the morning, math time, and other times we'd play Vivaldi. And then I love music, all kinds of music. I won't sit and be violated by any music, which is why words are important, right? Amen. And having that beautiful background has really impacted, I know it's impacted me, it impacted my kids, but I encourage people to do what you just said. Start today. You know, if you don't know, if you go back to carrieabbott.com where you find the shows, or you go to the legacyinstitute.com and you go back to the Legacy Library. This is for those to help you. You go back and see some of the shows we've done on the power of music I mentioned earlier to help you be healthier. And it's true. It actually changes your brain. And what you said, Dr. Evans, is so important. We have kids feasting on a diet of really bad music. And the cultural mores that are impacting them now have not made them smarter. We know this because of the outcomes of the testing going on with all of our public schools in particular, not necessarily the private schools or homeschools. And the whole cultural milieu is part of that. It's not just the words they're reading. It's the music they're listening to. It's the movies they're watching. And to do a reset or a refresh based on the concept that you're talking about, let's conserve what's good. Let's not forget what was good in the past. And let's create going forward what is life-giving and beautiful, right?
Absolutely. I had the great honor of getting to know the composer, Dr. Miklos Rozsa, who coincidentally was the composer who scored the film Ben-Hur with Charlton Heston, and also scored the film about the life of Christ, King of Kings.
Wow.
And Dr. Rozsa said I have no time for any music which does not reflect pleasure in life and, more importantly, pride in life. And he honored me by writing the introduction to one of my earlier books, Soundtrack, The Music of the Movies. And I think when you look at the work of the great composers, all of them were deeply inspired by the values that they held. And you can look, you can listen to music and realize that great music has an enormous, enormous effect.
So good. Listen, I'm seeing the clock is ticking away. Dr. Evans, what an honor to have you today. This is just the beginning of people following the work that you're doing at culturalconservation.org. Friends, check this out. And Dr. Evans, thank you for your time today. And everybody else, we will see you next time.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you so much.
You've been listening to The Carrie Abbott Show. If you'd like